BewilderingStories.com, your number one source for online literature, presents Rick Vargo as the Skull Hunter, written by S. Michael Lear. Episode 1. As our story begins, it is late at night as we enter a dilapidated apartment on the poor side of Chicago. Carl and Sarah are having trouble sleeping.
"He's screaming again,"
said Sarah as she buried her head deeper into her pillow.
"So take care of it,"
moaned Carl, half asleep.
"I did it last night. It's your turn."
"Fine,"
said Carl as he threw the bed sheets and sat up wearily.
"Why the hell is he screaming like this every night?"
"You know what it's like in a new house."
"Well, you need to take him to a doctor or something. I need my sleep, and I can't be getting up in the middle of the night. Shut up, your kid."
"My kid?"
"Ah, you know what I mean."
"When you asked me to marry, you said that you wanted to be a family. I thought that meant my son would be your son."
"It did. I mean, it does."
Carl wiped his hand across his face, trying to relieve some of the sleep from his eyes.
"Look, I'm tired, you're tired, and these late nights are getting to both of us. You go back to sleep, and I'll take care of it."
Carl leaned over, smiling, and gently kissed his wife on the forehead. Then Sarah rolled over and snuggled back into bed. Carl sat for a moment until he heard Sarah's breathing become slow and relaxed as she fell deeper into sleep. The smile dropped from his face as he looked down towards the door.
"I'll take care of that pain in the ass right now."
Carl got up and quietly opened and closed the bedroom door. He made his way down the hallway towards Ben's room. His face was dark and brooding as he clenched his fists tightly. When he reached Ben's door, he purposely banged against it and then threw the door open, denting the wall. Flipping the light switch, he looked across the room and saw the little boy huddled in the corner with a sheet pulled up to his eyes. Sweat was running down his face from screaming, and he was shaking uncontrollably.
"You little s***,"
said a red-faced Carl.
"You better shut the hell up or I'm going to make your life miserable."
But there's something in my room."
"Are you sassing me, boy?"
Carl stepped menacingly closer, causing the boy to curl up tighter into the corner.
"Damn, I should have known better than to marry a woman with a kid, especially an idiot like you. Now, I don't want to hear another word out of you. Do you understand me?"
Ben nervously nodded his head as his eyes darted back and forth.
"Good."
Carl started for the door when Ben cried out,
Please don't turn off the light. Please."
Carl turned and stared at the boy with a sick smile.
"Scared of the dark, are ya?"
Carl looked at Ben, and then at the light switch. He reached over and flipped the switch off, and quickly on again.
"What's the matter, scared?"
He almost cackled as he flipped it again and again.
"Stupid kid."
Carl sneered as he grabbed the doorknob and flipped the lights off one last time. Just as the light left the room, Carl screamed out, Ben sat frozen with fright as he heard banging coming from the other side of the room, and then all was silent until the door flung open. The light came on, and he saw his mother's terrified face.
"What's going on?"
she cried as she stared at her son, frightened. She ran to him and held him in her arms.
"Are you okay?"
Ben shook uncontrollably as she pulled away and looked into his eyes.
"Where's Carl?"
Ben lifted his arm, pointed towards the slowly closing bedroom door. Sarah nervously turned and looked horrified as the door slammed closed, just as the bloodied, mangled body of Carl slumped to the floor. The next morning, we find Rick Vargo sitting across town in a cafe, drinking coffee. I like Sunday mornings. They're quiet and peaceful, mainly because the hoarding masses are piled like cordwood into their chosen places of worship. Even in a city like Chicago that is normally smothering with people, Sunday is the one day you can walk down the street and breathe. I don't do the church thing, not because I don't believe in an afterlife, because I do, but mainly because I deal with it on a daily basis. It's my job and my curse. My name is Rick Vargo. I'm a private investigator. Not the kind that follows scummy husbands around to sleazy neighborhoods while they break a few of the commandments they preach about in church. Rather, I investigate what lies just beneath this thin veil that separates us from what comes after. I see things that others only dream about in their nightmares. Call them ghosts, specters, poltergeists, or whatever. I call them a pain in the ass. Actually, it's not uncommon for normal people to see these things. It's that brief shadow someone notices in the corner of his or her eye, or that sudden chill that comes from nowhere. The only difference is when they turn their head, the shadow is gone, whereas I see the figure, the face, and hear the voice. If that's all there was, it would be fine. But there is more lurking in the dark shadows than past loved ones. There are creatures of purest evil, horrid and grotesque beings that prowl the world looking to destroy the lives of the people they come into contact. They rip at the very souls of their victims, shredding the lives of everyone they touch, laughing at what they destroy. These are the shadows I chase. These are the criminals that only the court of universal law has jurisdiction. These are the bane of my curse. One such Sunday morning, I was having coffee in one of the panel houses on the south side, just off Dearborn, called Thilo's Cafe. It's one of those places where you can be left alone and conversations are never heard above a whisper. It's a place where a man's business is his own and the business he was into is not advertised. I had just gotten my regular coffee, black, with a slight kick to the mix, when I heard a rude voice crack the silence.
There he is!
I turned and saw two men in long black coats staring in my direction. I recognized one of them as being Detective Sergeant Brogan of the 21st District Police. He was a barrel-chested Irishman with a nasty face and a personality to match. He was one of those people who hated everybody and, well, everybody hated him. We had bumped heads in the past, and he took a particular interest in harassing me. I didn't recognize the other cop with him as they plodded towards my table.
Sam, said Brogan to his partner, you know that scum that they wipe off your shoes at night? Well, this is the guy who probably put it there.
You're trying to flirt with me, it ain't working, Brogan, I replied. Brogan slammed his ham-like fist onto the table.
Look, you pile of waste, if I had my way, you wouldn't be sucking in good air from decent people. I'm only here because of the chief, and the only thing stopping me from cracking that scrawny neck of yours is that I don't want to waste city money to bury you.
Save the romance talk for the fresh kid here. If you got something to say, then say it. If not, then take a hike. You're souring my coffee.
Fine. Why the chief wants anything to do with boiled scum like you, I'll never know. But he wants us to take you to a crime scene we're investigating.
I had helped Chief Hogan when his wife died several years ago. Sometimes when a person dies, they have such a tie to the world that they get lost. I helped the chief's wife find her way to the other side, and, well, ever since, he's been paying me back with a favor here and there. He's a man of strict living, who doesn't even spit unless there's a guide for it. If he wants me, then something bad has happened. Something really bad. I gulped down my coffee and grabbed my hat from the chair beside me.
Well, you know me. Always ready to bail you out of trouble, Brogan. The car's outside, and you're in back, wise ass.
Brogan snorted as his face turned red. We left the cafe and drove towards a segregated district where a lot of immigrants had taken residence. It was sectioned into Oriental, Irish, Italian, and a mishmash of other nationalities. They were the poor and unwashed masses who struggled day and night just to put crumbs of bread on the table. Years ago, the city made this area just for them, so to keep them away from the so-called regular people. For the families living there, it was like a prison without walls and no chance for parole. The area smelt of burnt cabbage and fat-laden laundry soap. Children sat in the streets alone with dirty faces and growling bellies.
How can people live like this? Asked the young detective.
First week on the job, kid? I asked.
How'd you know? He asked. And my name is Sam. Sam Barris.
Well, two reasons, Sam. One, Brogan's partners don't last much more than a week. They either die or quit. Sam looked at Brogan nervously.
Is that true?
Brogan just sat emotionless as his hands tightened their grip on the steering wheel. Oh, and number two, you're an idiot. The young detective whirled around the seat and grabbed me by the collar. His face was blazing with rage. Brogan slammed on the brakes and grabbed the young detective, thrusting him back into the seat. Then he turned to me.
Shut your yap, Vargo. The chief said to bring you along. He didn't mention how many pieces you had to be in when we got there.
I just smiled as the car started moving again and didn't say a word until we pulled up in front of a block of long brick buildings that stood five stories high. Many of the windows were open and several had sheets hanging out to dry. Young kids gathered around the shiny black sedan, pressing their dirty faces against the glass.
Get away, you hooligans!
Bellowed Brogan as he lumbered out of the car. A uniformed officer came out of the building and walked over to the detective. They spoke for a moment, and Brogan stretched his neck through the door.
All right, Vargo, here's the scoop. There's a lady upstairs whose husband was murdered last night, and we're here to find out what happened.
Sounds straight. Why do you need me?
Well, according to the officer, the man was gutted like a fish. The only person in the room when it happened was his kid, and his kid ain't a-talking. There are no other witnesses, and I can't find any way that someone could have gotten in or out of that room. That's where you come in. Apparently, the lad has been complaining of monsters in his room for a while now. What's so strange about that? A lot of kids imagine seeing monsters at night. Yeah, well, this imaginary monster left claw marks on the wall. Yep, sounds right up my alley, I said, climbing out of the back seat. Let's go. We made our way to the fifth floor apartment where several uniformed officers were standing just outside the door. Rogan, better let me go in first. If there's something in there, I don't want your ugly mug frightening it away. Keep pushing, Vargo, and they'll be sending me after some other nut to talk to your ghost. I slowly entered the apartment and stood for a minute, gathering the feel of the place. Usually I could tell right away if something or someone was there. People would be amazed how many souls wandered lost. They seemed to be everywhere, in the hallways, kitchens, on sidewalks, even bathrooms, dazed and confused as if not knowing that they're dead. I closed my eyes, but nothing came to me, not even the unusual feeling of chilled air that seems to signal a presence. After several minutes, I walked back into the hallway to Brogan. I'm not picking up on anything. What the hell does that mean? I don't know. From what you've told me, there should be something, but I'm just not sensing it. I turned back to the apartment confused. Where's the mother and the boy?
They're down the hallway at a neighbor's apartment, answered one of the uniformed officers.
Well, you better let me talk to them. Maybe, well, I don't know, maybe it might help.
All right, Fargo, but I got you on a short leash, so mind your manners.
We entered the neighbor's apartment where two women were sitting on the couch. One had reddish hair loosely tied in a bun, weeping, while the other tried to comfort her. Brogan removed his hat and was surprisingly gentle as he approached the pair.
This is Riley. I'm Detective Sergeant Brogan, and this here is Rick Vargo, who's helping me with the investigation of this terrible happening. He would like to ask you a few questions, if you don't mind.
Sarah Riley wiped the tears from her swollen face and tried in vain to straighten her hair. I could see that she was exhausted, and the toll of the night was evident in her face and reddened eyes.
I guess it'd be all right.
Mrs. Riley, did you or your husband notice anything strange in the apartment, like a sound or things moving that shouldn't?
What kind of fool question is that? Things moving? Strange sounds? Of course not.
How long have you lived there?
We just moved there after we got married last month.
So this man isn't the boy's father?
No, he isn't, if you must know. Ben's father died working in the mill nearly 2 years ago.
What exactly kind of man was your new husband?
Carl was a fine man, a good man. He took us in when no other would. He was a little rough, I admit, and was taken to temper at times, but do you know how hard it is for a widow to find a husband, especially now with things so tough? He loved us, and now he's gone. What are we to do with no money and no man to take care of us? What are we to do?
Mommy!
A small voice called from the other room. I turned just in time to see a small boy run to his mother's side. As he passed me, a wave of chilled air gripped my chest, almost knocking me backward. It was as though fingers pierced through my flesh and grabbed my heart for a brief second. I stared at the young boy, curled up beside his mother, his face buried into her neck. Cautiously, I reached my hand towards him. I felt the skin on my hand rip as blood slowly trickled down the skin. Pulling back quickly, I hid my bleeding hand inside my coat.
Brogan, I need to talk to this boy alone.
Brogan could tell by the look on my face that something was wrong.
Fine. Take him into the other room.
No, I think it would be best if you all went into the hallway.
Now, wait a minute.
Brogan shook his head until I opened my coat slightly, showing him my bloodied hand.
What the?
Take the others out there and leave the boy with me.
Brogan hesitated for just a moment, placed his hat on his head, then walked over to the two women.
Mrs. Riley, I need you and the young lady to come with me.
What about Ben?
Please, Mrs. Riley, trust me. Ben will be fine. She turned to her son, hugged him tightly, then walked with Brogan into the outer hallway. I knelt down in front of the small boy as he curled tightly into the couch. Ben, I promise I won't hurt you. As I said this, the boy just curled up tighter. You can trust me. I'm here to help you, so that you never see that monster again.
You believe me?
His small voice asked. Yeah, I believe you. Now, I want you to tell me about Carl.
He's mean.
Ben spoke, and I could see the air around him begin to pulse.
He tried to hurt me.
How did he hurt you?
He grabbed me and hit me.
The air pulsed red and began to darken around the boy as his voice became angrier.
He called me names.
The boy's voice changed into a deep, gravelly mix.
And he told me he would...
What did he say he would do?
He said he would...
Kill me!
Ben shot forward and opened his mouth wide as a creature sprung from him. I was barely able to move away as the snarling beast's massive claw swiped the air near my face. Rolling away, I leaped to my feet. The monster followed my every movement as it held its position between the boy and me.
Ben, I'm not here to hurt you, I said as I backed away. You must stop this.
But I'm not doing anything.
The boy cried as the beast growled loudly with drool-laden fangs.
Yes, you are, Ben. You created this monster. You have the power to stop it.
No, I won't let anyone hurt me again.
I know you're frightened and angry, but you must trust me.
That's what others said.
Ben, what would your father say if he knew about this?
My father is dead.
The creature started to move forward.
They killed him. The bad men, they killed him.
The beast jumped into the air and grabbed me with its fangs, knocking me down. I grabbed at the monster as it lifted me and threw me across the room. My clothes were torn. I could feel blood seeping from deep wounds underneath. Again, the massive creature moved towards me with each footstep shaking the floor as it snarled wildly.
Hargo, are you okay? What's going on in there?
Rogan called from the hallway.
The door is stuck. I can't get in. Everything's fine. Don't come in here.
Actually, everything wasn't so fine as the monster grabbed my torn coat and threw me hard against the wall. My sight began to blur, and I could feel consciousness slipping away. I struggled to stay awake as the lumbering beast cocked its body to strike again, when somewhere in the distance I heard a voice call out.
Ben!
The creature paused in mid-motion as Ben turned towards the direction of the voice. A bright light began to grow in the room and form into the shape of a tall, thin man. Ben's eyes grew as the man walked from the light into the room.
Father?
Said Ben, surprised.
Ben, you must let go of your anger.
The man spoke in a voice like an echo.
I don't understand. They killed you, the bad men.
The man reached out to the boy. They were both bathed in brilliant light. Suddenly the apartment door flew open in a hail of splintered wood as Brogan barreled inside, gun drawn.
My God, what's happening?
I saw Brogan's face turn ashen white and his body went limp as he saw the boy and his father. The grip on his pistol slackened as the sight chilled him to his very soul. Then he turned his attention to the snarling beast.
What the hell is that?
He screamed, firming his grip on the pistol once more.
Ben, there is an anger inside you that you must stop, said Ben's father as he held his son.
I don't understand, said Ben in tears.
Let go of your anger. Destroy it in your mind, and the monster will be gone.
How?
Asked Ben, still confused.
Think of a time when we were together and happy. Think of that whenever you're angry. Think of it now and kill the monster.
I'll try,
said Ben as he closed his tear-soaked eyes. The creature began to fade as Ben began to smile.
You have the power. It is inside of you. Whenever you feel the monster wanting to come out, use that power.
Ben's father stepped from the boy, smiling, as the ball of light swirled around him.
Remember, I always love you.
The swirling ball slowly faded until Ben's father disappeared.
Father?
Ben cried as tears streamed down from his eyes. Still weak, I managed to summon enough strength to crawl to the couch, and Ben rolled to me, wrapped his arms around my neck, and held tightly. Stunned, Brogan stared at the place where Ben's father had disappeared.
Hutta!
It's a long story, I said as Ben's mother rushed to her son and took him from me. I'll fill you in if you'll do me one favor.
Hell? What's that?
Just stop by a bar on the way to the hospital. I could use a drink.
Yeah, I think I'll join you,
said Brogan, still shaking as he helped me off the floor.
Asking me out for a date, eh, Brogan? I didn't think you liked me that much.
You're a real smartass, Fargo. A genuine 100-proof smartass.
The Skull Hunter has been brought to you by BewilderingStories.com, your number one source for online literature. To see the written version of this story and many others, please check out Bewildering Stories Online Magazine at www.bewilderingstories.com. And be sure to tune in next time for the continuing adventures of Rick Vargo as the Skull Hunter.